Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
At the heart of any disappointment is unmet expectations. The Day Before Monday is an encouraging and practical podcast giving you the tools to have a happier work experience, yes, even on Mondays. You no longer need to dread the Day Before Monday because we're going to go deep with candid conversations with experts to help you push your way to happier days at work. And here's your host, Brenda Cunningham of Push Career Management with The Day Before Monday.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Day Before Monday. Now, you all who have been listening thus far know that I've been in jobs that I have hated. And ultimately, the solution for Brenda, was to leave corporate America, was to just walk away. Now, it did not happen all of a sudden. I did not just wake up one day and decide to leave. But over the course of probably a couple of years, this thing happened and I walked away. That was my solution. So what you know today as Push Career Management started as a side hustle, right? Mm-hmm. A full-time engineer and a resume writer on the side. Who does that?
Apparently you do.
Apparently I do. I actually was freelancing on behalf of other firms. It was a great launching pad for me. But today, I want to bring in some of the big guns to talk about the gig economy, freelancing, consulting, you name it, but your escape from Cubicle Nation. That was a plug for one of our guests today. Okay. And so today, our very special guest, Jeremy, you are going to not let me mess up your last name. Jeremy Chevalier.
Très bien.
Close enough.
Yes. Okay.
Of Gigloft and Pamela Slim of Pamela Slim.
There you go, PamelaSlim.com and the Main Street Learning
Main
Lab.
Main Street Learning Lab. And so I'm most familiar with your work with Main Street Learning Lab. So many of my entrepreneurial buddies are engaging with you and have some great partnerships with your Learning Center.
Yes.
Okay. And so I found out as I was trying to prepare for today that Pam is a huge fan of John Legend.
Yes, I am. I'm his number one fan.
How did this happen? I mean, what did he do to make you just want to swoon?
What did he not do? Seriously. And I just, for the record, it's not like romantic swooning. It is body of work swooning. And I have always loved his music for a long time. I wrote Escape from Cubicle Nation to Evolver, one of his albums. And it really was actually in digging in more to his story that I learned that he actually was a management consultant at Boston Consulting Group, and was his side hustle was music that he was doing on the weekends. And it was totally fascinating to kind of learn about his background. He was salutatorian. He graduated from high school at age 16. He has a big education advocacy background, social justice lens. And to me, he's such an interesting person who really exemplifies creating a very powerful body of work. He's best known for his music, but he actually works on many, many different initiatives, one of which he just announced today, which is an entrepreneurial venture for folks that are coming out of incarceration and working in partnership to provide some entrepreneurial support. So he just, at every turn, and now he's a coach on The Voice, which I love. So, like, come on now. Like, what, didn't he married well? And, like, I can't say enough good things about
him. So I'll tell you, I did not know all of those reasons for your love for John Legend, but now I may find myself a John Legend fan. I'm not a big modern music listener. I'm kind of old school, kind of stuck in what I listened to when I was 15, and I'm kind of done. Okay. But now, Jeremy, you are a graphic designer turned marketer turned startup founder, teacher at heart, eternal student of life, lover of soccer, rock climber, and you love meaningful relationships, and you're a native French speaker.
That's correct.
You gotta bust out some of that French for us just real quick. Just give me something.
Anything at all?
Anything. Tell me how beautiful I am.
Vous êtes magnifique.
Ah, see? It sounds great in French. Okay. And so So these are our amazing guests today. I want you to know them as people before we delve into them as professionals. And so, Pam, I first knew of you from your book, Escape from Cubicle Nation. And then you've more recently released the Body of Work book. And that is really exciting. And I think it's a more holistic way for people to kind of consider the things that they've done throughout their lives and careers. But you've been an author, community builder, consultant. You were corporate director of training and development for Barclays Global Investors. Good Lord.
Yes, I was.
And so all these things, you served places like HP, Charles Schwab, Chevron, Cisco. And now you've been an advisor to thousands of entrepreneurs and companies serving small businesses like Infusionsoft. And so these are really big brands and things that you're doing to make your impact on the world. Why don't you all tell us in your own words who you are and what you're all about?
Good.
Yeah.
Ladies first.
So I think, boy, it's an ever-evolving question, isn't it? Depending on the day. But really, one of the things that feels really wonderful, being a 53-year-old woman now, and coming into this certain season of my work that really is, to me, wrapping threads of work that I've done over the decades that feel like it's really a full circle, and coming into work that I've always done certain pieces of, but now is all kind of coming together. So my degree in college was international service and development with a focus in economic development from a grassroots perspective in Latin America. So I lived in Mexico and Colombia and Brazil. Wow. And spent a lot of time doing that work. And I just realized I didn't want to be an expatriate aid worker because philosophically, politically, I don't agree with that. Okay. But also, I really got passionate about working within my own community. So spent a lot of years in San Francisco being a volunteer executive director for a youth group in Capoeira, the Afro-Brazilian martial art. I was super passionate about that. Wow. In my 20s, and just did a lot of work through the years in community building. And it's like that fish in water, oft-used metaphor, of sometimes when you're swimming so much in it that you don't become aware of actually what it is. And now, since we opened about 3 years ago, the Main Street Learning Lab, of really being a laboratory where I met you, where I work with Aisha, with so many other amazing leaders. And then when I have begun to go out and really do more work within the Mesa ecosystem, and now I'm writing my next book about ecosystems, it's one of those things of like, oh my gosh, like I think community builder is really who I am at my soul root.
Yeah.
And it's interesting as we discuss the gig economy and different ways that we look at our body of work and things through time, there doesn't always have to be some nice big bow that's wrapping things up. But it does feel good at certain times to realize that it wasn't by accident that many of the experiences that I've had have led me to where I am now. And a lot of the things that Aisha and I talk about a lot in at the Main Street Learning Lab is how what we're experiencing on Main Street in Mesa, Arizona is really Main Streets everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's such a deconstruction, reconstruction, reinvention of what's happening. And we think we can make a really strong impact on how it is that communities do inclusive economic development.
Oof, I love that. And we found out a few minutes ago that you also speak French.
Oui, je parle français aussi.
See, that's lovely. And Jeremy, essentially, can you round out your body of work for us or what you're all about?
Sure. I mean, given the fact that I'm mostly just getting started, I can say that as you read off from my bio, I started in graphic design and have steadily worked my way up the business services ladder, right? Going from graphic design into more of marketing, into more of like now I'm getting into growth marketing and just like learning how to grow and gain traction for companies. My body of work is centering around two kind of core areas. One, connecting talent with opportunity, across the world.
Good.
Right? And so Gigloft is doing that in certain ways. Publoft is doing that. And then the other sort of passion and life's work that I really see myself diving into is applying sort of like new tech disruption, whatever, to the legal political space. And civic engagement and all of that. That's been something that I've focused on more in the past, where now I'm really focused on that freelancing, talent economy side of things.
Good, good, good. This is so exciting to hear these perspectives from two people who care so much about community and society as a whole. And so just I'm in a habit of defining things for people. And we may have some misconceptions around what the gig economy truly is.
Yes.
And so I'd like to kind of kick things off officially with a definition of the gig economy. What do you think it is?
I'll let you go first because that's in your company name. So clearly you've thought about it.
I appreciate it. So the main distinction that I like to make when talking about the gig economy is... need to stay close to the mic. The relative difference between what we call the gig economy and what we oftentimes lump into that and can be sort of grouped under that umbrella term, but is more specifically defined as the talent economy.
Okay.
Where the gig economy specifically refers to any gig that needs to be done, right? Driving somebody across town, picking up groceries, and anybody who meets the spec can do that. Whereas the talent economy is much more centered around solving a problem with a skill set that takes more than just, you know, a couple days to acquire. And so that's my primary definition, where gig economy really is about that finite gig, right? A gig worker is somebody who's just, they're going to have a car and they might drive for Uber or drive for Lyft or both. Or they might have a computer and just kind of like do like data entry, that sort of stuff. That's just like one-off or kind of like general skills.
Okay.
And then within that umbrella, talent economy being more specifically the skills that maybe take longer to develop.
That's pretty interesting. So I looked up a definition on Merriam-Webster Dictionary because that's how I roll. And it says an economic activity that involves the use of temporary or freelance workers to perform jobs typically in the service sector, to your point. Right. It says one reason the gig economy has taken off is that people tend to change jobs more frequently and many enjoy the flexibility of choosing when and where they work. And so it sounds like we're finding that people they don't like this whole 9-to-5 thing anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's getting old, right? Just today, I was listening to the news. They're talking about this 5-hour workday that they're being kind of piloting in Germany somewhere. And I'm like, well, heck yeah. Why not? Because look at how much time we just spend just chit-chatting at work and doing all these things.
Europeans have it together, man.
Dude,
when it comes
I'm
to
trying
working.
To tell you.
I'm like, 6-week vacation. They're like, see you later.
6 months maternity leave. And,
right.
And this is amazing stuff. I mean, and it's not even difficult. It's not particularly complex. It's just... are we willing to do things differently? And so something that I saw, well, I'm gonna have to look at my notes for this because I really liked that you said it. So Jeremy, I looked at your LinkedIn page. You say that 85% of people hate their jobs. I capitalized it so that I could put emphasis on the word hate their jobs. And then you say the familiar narrative of school, college, debt, job seeking, and missing fulfillment does not have to be the norm. With a school that teaches us freelancing in real time, we can choose to think, learn, and create our ideal work situation, and that's Gig Loft. So a couple of questions for you.
Please.
Where did these stats come from? How do you know that 85% of people hate their jobs?
I personally don't. So the stat comes from a study conducted by Upwork in partnership with the Freelancers Union.
Awesome. And then the second thing I want to say is, yes, 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 I just had this conversation with my son, is that we do not have to follow this traditional prescribed formula that has been laid out for us since, I don't know when,
since
I was born.
Yeah,
certainly. And it's been beat into our heads. Go to, you know, you finish high school, you go to college, you get a job, you retire, you get your watch, and then it's over. And then you look back over the last 30 years, everything changed.
Mm.
Everything. There are no more watches. There are no more gold watches. There are no more retirement cakes. Right? There's no more, I worked from the mail room to the C-suite.
Right.
And there's no more of that. People are leaving jobs just at alarming rates. Companies are laying off left and right. Job security has gone right the heck out of the window.
Mm-hmm.
And so no wonder 85% of people hate their jobs. They're going to this place every day that they don't want to be at just because they're trying to feed their families, right? I get fired up about this.
I get fired up too, and I am not in any way discounting the veracity of the statistics. The nuance to me, though, is first of all, it does so depend. In the 10 years I spent as a consultant to large companies before I started doing early stage startup work, so from 1996 to about 2005 or six,
mm-hmm.
and I actually met a lot of people who love what they do. So a perspective I have is that there's no one evil work mode of working as an employee versus a contractor versus a gig. It really depends on, it's not the construct of the job, because there are days where I would love to have like health insurance and, you know, some like bonus coming and the regular paycheck. Anybody who's been in it like I have for 23 years or even for 3 months when you're just starting, it takes a huge amount of endurance to do it. And the context is a 25-year career coach to what are the drivers that impact satisfaction or not at a job. Some can be contained within the corporate culture or within a certain way jobs are structured that might not be reflecting current day. And then there's a huge component, which is what kind of work has an individual done, which I'm sure you know as well, right? Working in the career space to take advantage of taking ownership of their job and for looking for opportunities. So, you know, my own career path, I loved every job I had. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I am not a disgruntled former corporate person.
Okay.
So sometimes I think when we're starting to talk about the new world of work, there, I agree 1,000% that there are some hard things that are just coming down in structures, thankfully, that are crumbling that don't work. But let's not forget, there's also elements to it that we need in a diverse ecosystem. We need small, medium, and large companies.
Yes.
Like for a lot of freelancers, their clients are large companies. So if everybody quits and grabs the goldfish like Jerry Maguire and goes away, then we're not going to have any clients as well.
So I love that perspective, and thanks for keeping us on our toes, right? This is not some sort of vacuum. We don't come in with our preconceived notions. And so I'm curious, are there clues that people could kind of be on the lookout for that might indicate, hey, maybe corporate space just isn't right for you? It's not evil in its entirety, but it's not the right fit for everybody. What kind of clues or indicators could people be paying attention to?
Well, and I think when we say corporate, that can be a massive range, right, mm-hmm. in terms of types of companies, size, environment. So part of it could be, what are the kinds of things that are important to me in terms of what make me feel that I come alive? What kind of teams do I like to be on? How connected do I need to be to the mission of a company? That was something I heard all the time doing Escape from Cubicle Nation work, was people would say, I spend all my days stressing out about stuff that literally doesn't matter. Like, I didn't even know what it does.
Mm.
And a lot of that is being in a larger institution that's disconnected from the impact of the work versus, I know, working with people directly, like I see an impact immediately, like over Zoom as I'm looking at somebody and we're growing their business. So there can be certain elements of noticing, for sure, the day before Monday dread. Like, that's a perfect name because
thank you.
It's a real thing. That's a very big indicator. And this, you know, the Sunday blues. And so noticing that you're not really excited to go in, where you feel like you are in situations where you feel afraid to actually speak your truth, mm-hmm. where you have to fight to have your point of view valued, where you feel like you're doing work that is not really aligned with how you're naturally wired. So it's like, if I were to do like data analysis or accounting or something, like that would be torture for me. Yeah. And if that was the majority of my work, even if I believed in the company and the mission yeah. and had great coworkers, I probably would not be energized over
Can't
time.
Can't overcome the dread of this particular assignment, even in the context of a great team
That's
or
right.
a great boss
That's
or what
right.
have you. That's like me at tax time. I turn into something, I don't know, it's like kryptonite for me. Like I hate the thought of putting together a P&L statement. I hate...
You should hire a freelancer.
Right.
I do hire freelancers, but then they ask me questions like, what is this line item on your QuickBooks statement? And I'm like, I don't want to talk about taxes at all. And so it really damages me almost. And it's one of those things that I'm like, I know if that was ever a part of my job, I'd hate the job.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but you're right. I've actually been in within the same company in two different teams. In one team I loved. I had a great supportive environment. My boss was, you know, supportive of me. I had two small children at the time, so it was never like a big issue. Oh, Brenda has to leave at 4 o'clock to get her kid to karate or whatever mm-hmm. it was. It was never a big issue. And then all of a sudden I changed departments and it was like no personal relationships. And when 4 o'clock rolled around, it was like, yeah, but we got this conference call with China, so you need to be your butt on the phone call. Mm. Never mind that your son has karate. Sorry for you. It changed everything because my priorities were my family.
Mm-hmm. And what changed also was the perception of why you were valuable to the company or mm-hmm. what about you was valuable to the company, right? So in the previous department, it was probably a lot more about outputs. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the new department, it was probably a lot more about inputs, right? A butt in a chair.
Yeah.
And to go back to Pam's point, one of the core things that we identify with students who want to come in and be a part of GigLoft is a dissatisfaction with the work that we're doing. And we, as human beings in the 21st century, like, we don't just have the ability to do work that is meaningful and fulfilling, but we have like a right to it. And a duty and an obligation
and
to
a craving
do work.
For it, right?
Yeah, but it's like a societal duty to yeah. find what energizes us and do that for work. Find what we would do if we didn't have to earn money doing it.
Oh, Jesus. And so, Pam, I went to your website and you said that you have the power to shape the world through your work. Then you went on to your business accelerator, right? Mm-hmm. You've helped thousands of entrepreneurs already. Can you share one of your biggest success stories? Maybe one that just comes to mind that maybe exemplifies this whole gig economy or talent economy mm-hmm. as I'm learning new vocabulary mm-hmm. today.
Yeah, boy, it's hard to choose. It's like, you know, when your kids try to force you to say who was your favorite kid, I always avoid that question. But I often talk about my dear friend Willie Jackson, who I met when I was on a book tour for Escape from Cubicle Nation 2009. He was living in Atlanta, and he was 25 and working for a large consulting firm. We had a great group there, and he stood up when he did introductions, and he said, you know, I've been following your blog for a really long time. I've read everything you've ever written, you know, and he had this certain kinds of presence that my best friend Desiree happened to be at the same workshop, and we both looked at each other, and we're like, this is the next president of the United States.
Wow.
Like, he just has that presence about him that was really, really special. He ended up going to retreat that I led with my colleague, Charlie Gilkey, that was called Liftoff, the very first one we did. And as he tells it, he never went back to work after that. So I tend to do that sometimes to people when we hang out is where he ended up. He had been doing a little bit of website development freelancing on the side. And for him, when he was looking at some of the folks who were a little bit older within his company, he was seeing people who were on their third marriage, totally stressed out, you know, working crazy hours. And he had this giant, he had like a 3,000 square foot house in Atlanta. He was unmarried. He was 25. We were like, what are you doing, Willie Jackson? You should be like having fun. So he quit his job. He started to do consulting. And he really built that over time. And then he just began to get more and more deeply into the new world of work. He ended up connecting with my dear friend Seth Godin and becoming his chief technology officer for the Domino Project, which was Seth's publishing company. And anybody who gets a chance to, you know, work with Seth, he's an amazing mentor. And Willie is an amazing person and just brought an incredible skill set to that. And through the years has just done incredible work, really, you know, interesting different kinds of work, and really has taken a body of work approach to it. So, you know, a lot of people would just be like, I've hit the gold mine and working with Seth, I'm just going to stay here forever. He left. Now he's actually, well, he's been in Silicon Valley doing inclusion work from his experience as an African-American male, especially in tech, of really helping companies understand how they can create more inclusive work experiences. Nice. But he's just always growing and developing. And what I saw from this amazing young man, it makes me emotional, because it's just when you recognize sometimes that weird, bizarre magic that happens where we happen to cross paths at the right time, where I was able to meet him and he's been very influential to me. He was able to meet me and we kind of gave each other what we needed so that he was able to make a decision that I think really radically altered the whole course of his life. Wow. Now, as I always tell Mr. and Mrs. Jackson, like, I'm sorry, they were not necessarily happy with me. Here was their amazing son, Florida State graduate, who had a really good high-paying job at a consulting company where they thought their job was done. And then here I come, you know, along and really help shake it up. And I am sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Jackson, if you're listening, because I understand it can be really disruptive. Sometimes within family systems, and especially for an African-American male, you know, where they've sacrificed a lot for his parents in order to kind of get where he was very significant in terms of barriers he had to face to get where he was. But it all the more makes me excited, and they've come around, and I love them.
Good.
Because he is such a powerful mentor for folks that he works with. And I think he also has a point of view that there's nothing wrong with getting a full-time job if that's what you want, but he's able to really lead and be somebody that folks can follow.
Yeah, I remember when I first announced to my family that I was leaving corporate America and I was starting my own business full-time. I'd already started it, again, side hustle, and then I was getting ready to walk away for real and be a full-time entrepreneur. And the looks that I got were just, they pierced my soul. Like, what are you thinking? Have you lost your mind? Like,
Thanksgiving was tense.
Well, I went to school for engineering. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? You're about to throw away all that all those parent plus loans, all that time. It was a 5-year program.
Right.
You're going to throw all that away to go pursue a resume writing dream? What's wrong with you? And so I think fast forward nearly 10 years now, as more and more of my same relatives have needed my services, the looks have gotten a lot duller.
That's funny.
Okay, so I want to make sure that we jump into kind of some heavy gig economy freelance conversation. I'm going to come back to some of the things that I wanted to talk about otherwise, but drawbacks to being in the gig economy, right? You mentioned health insurance. That kind of is a deal breaker for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so are there other things that people should be considering or weighing as they're contemplating participating in the gig economy?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of drawbacks if you see them that way. The one thing I will say before listing some of them out is that even with things like health insurance, like there's constantly new solutions coming out. So there's a company out of Silicon Valley called Catch. And Catch is benefits for freelancers. So they do retirement savings accounts, They're rolling out health insurance, right? Like, people are solving these problems. So that's the thing to keep in mind with, like, the cons are little by little
eroding. They're
just being solved, yeah, and eroding out of the picture. But I would say the primary things are somewhat of a disassociation or a disconnect with friends and family who are not controlling their schedules 100%, right? Where, you know, they've got the weekends off, but they're 8 to 5 busy. Whereas for you, maybe you're trying to like go to the gym at 10 o'clock and none of your friends can do it. So that's one of the drawbacks is like a misalignment of schedules with the people in your life. The other big thing I would say is the what everybody describes as like the ups and downs, right? The inconsistency, the lack of predictability, which is really the core problem that we're trying to solve with Gigloft is just like, how do you make working for yourself predictable? Because when you can figure out how to make the income predictable, everything else will kind of fall into place.
You can breathe again if you know that your electric bill is going to get paid.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
Well, and to me, it's can we get a little political for a second?
Please do.
Go there.
So if we're going to be big picture analytical, you know, the gig economy as a branded thing has been around for a real long time. And I think it's hard to talk about a new business model without talking about economic class, without talking about privilege and opportunity. Okay. Because when you look at, it's funny, in 2006, I think, when Escape came out, I had my friend Desiree's daughter was in college and she was talking to her about taking like a nail technician class, you know, to get like to do nails. Yep. And her mom was like, she was in high school. That's right. She was still in high school, Adriana. And so her mom was like, why are you doing that? Like, you know, you should be taking AP classes to make it easier for you to get in college. And she was like, Mom, like, that's just going to be my side hustle when I'm in college, like as a way to make money. Side hustle was a term. And I wrote a blog post about it. And in the early stages, that was like one of the ways that term started to take off with Escape from Cubicle Nation. It was not my term. It's a term that had been used in the community for a long time. Because when there have been folks who are in an economic class where they had to be working multiple jobs. Mm. This is not a new thing. This has been the reality for a lot of people for a long time. Mm. And I'm, you know, as enthusiastic, I love tech. I love the development of the gig economy. I love and believe in talking to people about doing work that's meaningful to them. And when you start to look at it with a lens on how it is that we're constructed as a society, that some of that is not going to be as available of an opportunity for everybody who's out there. And other things, like happens a lot within culture, has been there a long time, but then, you know, our lovely Silicon Valley bros can come along and rename it and suddenly have it be something, right, that's modern and a new thing.
It's hip.
And yeah, and I think it's really important that we look at it that way and that we also look at from the perspective of doing the great work that you're doing, of really specifically providing skills and looking at economic stability, there's a lot of people in the gig economy who are picking up Uber shifts and so forth, not because they want to, but because they need to, because they're the sole provider, or it's a single parent, or they have a sick relative, or they have much bigger student loans because they didn't have friends and family or family wealth in order to bring it forward. So I think if we start to look at it that way, from a broader perspective, it helps us to make sure that the awesome tools that make me super excited that you're developing are really brought all the way across our communities, and that we also learn and leverage experience that people have had for generations about doing this work and don't pretend that we're the first ones that are coming up with these ideas.
And I love just going back to his definition of this talent economy, right, which is different from gig economy, as I've learned, which is use your skills. Yeah. Not everybody just has to drive an Uber to make extra cash, right? Yeah. My skills, even as a full-time engineer, were always in writing. Mm-hmm. And so I was earning extra cash as a writer, not as a pizza delivery driver, not as a whatever have you. And so I was actually still tapping right into those skills. And sure, not everybody has them. And so we do have other options and other outlets like data entry, like whatever have you.
Well, everybody has a skill that is valuable to a business or to a subset of businesses out there. And that's what we're trying to like figure out how to like roadmap, right? Is like, you may not have hard skills. Like, yeah, I've been using Photoshop since I was 14 years old and I can use the Adobe Creative Suite like nobody's business. Not everybody is that, but everybody can create value in business operations that are going on out there. And what's happening with this sort of transition, this democratization of business where, you know, entrepreneurship is nothing new. Like mom and pop shops have been around since the dawn of time, mm-hmm. right? What's changing now is that the scale to which businesses can impact, can exist, has increased because of the internet, because of many things. And to your point, Pam, by tapping into all communities across the board and saying, you know what, it's not just about people who are people who have a car that's 2013 or newer, whatever it is, right? Because I can't drive for Uber, my car's too old. But everybody's got something interesting. Like we've got three students who are not in the United States, one of whom is in Kenya. And who's just making a name for himself as an automobile writer, right? He's passionate about cars. He's passionate about writing. And that's his thing.
There you go.
And he can write for automobile brands anywhere in the world. He's creating value. And so the goal is really to connect people with those opportunities, but also to the flip side of that coin, make people aware and help people kind of like discover what skills they already have and how those skills can be valuable.
That's really good. One thing I want to say, I don't know if I'm correcting myself, just something that I heard in my head when I was referring to people like data entry clerks or what have you. I want to clarify that I do not mean that those people do not have skills.
Absolutely.
Right? It takes an enormous amount of talent and skill to be able to enter data by the volumes, yep. right? That is not to be underestimated. And so I just want to make sure I said that again the
That's
right
good.
Way. All right.
Yeah, okay. And there's an interesting thing in some of the work that's being done, even at looking at compensation and equity, that is also, I think, related to a really in the cool ways to what can be informing how people understand what skills they have is looking at, in some cases, what is lived experience and how can people put context for lived experience as opposed to school book learning experience,
yes.
right? Or like being in a job.
Excellent.
Because depending upon what it is that you're looking for and some of the things that companies need, especially if they have a B2C, like directly to consumer, a lot of the lived experience people can have is kind of perfect for the gig economy where it really is about meeting a specific need that where you gained that skill is not as important as having that skill and mm-hmm. being able to deliver it. And within the traditional world of work, that's where sometimes you look at that those structures where the resume robots,
yep.
they're kicking people out before they even
yes.
have the opportunity. And if you ask me, like, would I rather hire somebody to do something for me that's just had book learning as opposed to somebody who's actually done it every single day and learned and gotten experience from that? Every day I'm going to be hiring somebody who's actually had the experience.
So listen to this, guys, right? Yes, we know you're talking to a resume writer, right? And so we know that, like she said, the resume robots, they do exist, called applicant tracking system. But some people are human beings and they can look beyond the textbook of your resume. Really, I want to encourage you to include those life experiences right
yes.
there on your resume. Life experience, volunteer experience, they're all experiences,
mm-hmm.
right? If you cared for your loved one, you were a stay-at-home mom, you all these things. Account for some of those experiences
yes.
right there on your resume. Some people are going to say, absolutely not. This person has small children. This person has no education, you know, higher education from a college source. Some people are going to say no. And some people are going to say, yes, you are exactly what I was looking for.
And to that point, you know, a resume, like I still have a resume. Mm-hmm. I've been loosely.
Good.
Yeah.
Do
I mean,
you? Yeah.
Yeah. I've got 10 resumes to the 10 most recent positions I've applied to, you know, and they all highlight specific skills that I've identified I have and relevant experience, relevant to the position. But the thing that's important to note is that whether you're presenting that information in a resume or on a LinkedIn profile or in a cover letter or in a cold email or in however you're hacking your way into the next career opportunity that you want to engineer for yourself, it's about speaking the lingo of the person who's on the other end, right? Just like in marketing, we have to use our target audience's language to connect with that reader, with that customer, with whatever.
Amen,
in the same
brother.
Way, you got to market yourself, whether it's resume or whatever else, and say, here's how this 2 years of volunteer experience at this nonprofit has prepared me for this role. Or here's how caring for my elderly grandmother for 16 years has prepared me to crush it in this role.
Good. And so if you're listening to this, we do open phones on Monday mornings. This coming Monday, I'm going to talk about how to add your freelance or consulting experience to your resume. So tune into that on Monday morning, 7:30.
That's really important. There's one thing, too, that I just think conceptually is important that to me is in the body of work framework, because as needed within companies that serve particular gig interests, so it could be, you know, Uber drivers, delivery, or freelance, they understandably will look at that as a specific thing and a role. And we need to be careful about not putting the old world lens on it, saying somebody is choosing to do that. So they're an Uber driver and therefore they're not part of the talent economy. And I didn't at all say you said that, just for the record.
I appreciate it.
Gotcha.
But it made, I wanted to highlight it because I know many people who actually can be doing like deep talent gig work.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they drive Uber on the side or deliver for Postmates. It's actually very, very common as people are filling in the gaps. It's kind of like ice cream after a big meal, right? Like you just fit it in. And
sometimes you just want to get out of your house and I might as well make some money, so I'll drive a car.
That's right. And there's so many, you know, great things about it. And so that, as you're saying, it's being aware that people are going to make different choices at different times.
Yes.
And it's not, in the old world, we're so used to just going back to, this is an engineer. Like, we want to put somebody in a bucket. This is somebody who's just doing, you know, data entry, when we're all rich, complex, interesting people. And people can be working on different things. And to me, it's just different tools that you have. Like, I think it's amazing. Every time I get in a, you know, a Lyft or an Uber or anything like that, it's amazing to me to think about the technology that enables somebody
that
to just turn your phone on.
Yeah.
Well, for me, as the writer.
Right.
But for somebody who is like, I think I want to make some money between 5 and 7 p.m. and literally can turn the app on their phone and make it. That is magic to me.
That is pretty magical.
I'm like, imagine we apply that to a whole bunch of different areas. That is magic, because then people don't have to market, which is the part where a lot of people fall down.
And I would love to just add a quick point to that, which is that before my business partner, Matt, had the vision for GigLoft, we went through a startup accelerator for PubLoft, which is our marketing agency.
Okay.
And the vision, the original vision for PubLoft, was to be the Uber of marketing services, right? Now, there's different companies that are exploring ways to connect a business or a client who needs some kind of writing, some kind of service like that, creative service, we'll call it, with the creative professionals to just deliver the work without necessarily having to sell the client, manage the client, whatever. And what Uber and Lyft and Postmates and all these have done is they've wedged themselves into the market with one particular problem that people need solved, right? Getting from Mesa to Sky Harbor Airport. And the same can absolutely be done for creative services. It's just a matter of picking a vertical and doing it well and ideally to the exclusion of all else, right? That's where we failed, is we got too distracted by all of the services.
And so tell us a little bit more about GigLoft and what you guys are doing right now.
Sure, I appreciate it. So the vision for GigLoft is to be really a comprehensive school model for anybody who wants to go from, think of it as like from me to me, Inc., right? Mm-hmm. And so our wedge into the market is freelance. And right now it's more of a side project where we've got an online course feel and a freelance coaching component to it. Freelance is the wedge in, but it's, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, Pam, it's just one way for people to make money, right? You can also write a book. You can do a podcast. You can start a newsletter on Substack and get paid by people who want to read your newsletter. And we're kind of like setting the foundations for the personal brand movement, where more and more people are just contributing their personal value to the world in ways that people will want to pay in some capacity, no. whether that be as an artist or a creator creating your own thing and putting it out there, or as a service professional rendering a service to a business or to another professional.
That was going to be my next question is, who do you serve? And so thank you for clearing that up before I even asked the question. And then Pam, I'd love to for our listeners to learn a little bit more about what's going on at the Main Street Learning Lab.
I'd love to do it, but I just have to comment. I can't help myself. It's so cool because I remember in, I don't know what year it was, when Tom Peters came out with the Fast Company article about the brand called You, that in the movement of, and I think, and then Dan Pink wrote Free Agent Nation, I think, that was way back. I need to look it up, but maybe 2000, early 2000s. And what happened is the ideas were introduced then, and now we're at a point, whatever handful of years, 20 years later, to actually be able to deliver it with technology.
That's right.
You know, so it's just really cool to think about that, where it really, that ripple was started so long ago, and it's really cool to be seen, you know, to be seeing it come to life. And the tools make all the difference in the world, you know, but like, thank God for the people who were yelling in, you know, amidst the noise where everybody thought they were crazy.
Visionaries 20 years
early
ago.
On. Right. Yeah. So at the Main Street Learning Lab, we are a learning lab, as the name says. My husband, Daryl, and I opened it 3 years ago in downtown Mesa. So yay for Mesa entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Because my colleague here is also from Mesa. And we like to think of ourselves as the undiscovered secret here in the Valley. Everybody thinks of us as the awkward cousin at the holidays that we sit at the children's table, when really we're the cool auntie or uncle that nobody knows is really cool. So part of it was, as we opened it up, my husband's Navajo. And so we really noticed in Mesa that there's amazing community that's quite diverse, but we did not see any leadership represented of leadership from different communities, especially Native American, African American, Hispanic, that were being featured that in, you know, in conferences and speaking on panels, that were being given opportunities in leadership locally, that were participating in the economic growth of the area. And so we specifically wanted to just see what it is that community needed. And we spent the first couple of years doing what we call Listen First, which is just having tons of conversations with everybody from the community, trying to find out, you know, what are you working on? What are you looking for? And really, it was just somebody would come up with an idea. You know, I've known Aisha for a super long time. She does amazing work. And she was like, hey, you know, I'd love to do my Startup Life Support mastermind here. And we're like, great. Let's do it. Let's put it on the calendar. And then there'd be somebody else who was like, hey, I want to do this. And we're like, awesome. Why don't you do it? So during the day, it's my office and my husband's office. But the evenings and the weekends, it's turned into really events led by and for the community, in particular, entrepreneurs of color. Because a very specific point of view that I have just from my experience and in a deep belief is there's assumptions very often from my own people that is the reason why we don't see more folks in positions of leadership is because they lack skills or knowledge. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that is true at all.
Nor do I.
I believe they're not visible.
Yes.
And opportunities are not given. And we have many assumptions about who actually is an expert or not, which if we had, you know, 13 hours, we could totally break down sociologically, right, to kind of the reasons behind that. But so very specifically, that's why to us, it's really important. I don't do like the programming there. It's really led by the experts in our community. We want people to come in and see people who can share lived experience, who are experts, who are leading, and we really have a natural sprouting people who come to events that then get excited to do theirs. And then to me, the part I love the most as a community builder is then running around, sticking my nose in everybody's business, finding out what's happening, what stores are open, who's funding what, like what jobs are open, and to really make the introductions so that we can begin to see more
representation. And you know that's happening. It's like more and more lately, I can't blink my eye without seeing something else being held at CAIR. I'm like, what? That's just the place to be. I'm almost inclined to drive all the way to Mesa, which is really, really far for me. It's like road trip. I need snacks in the car.
Yeah, right.
It's like a disrespectful kind of drive for me.
Exactly.
And so I'm like, I'm getting ready to jump in my 2011 minivan and roll to Mesa and see what this is all about. But you guys have got some really exciting things going on. Yeah. And so what's happening, what's coming up like right now? Like how do people get involved in the Gigloff classes that are going on?
I mean, the best way to check us out is to just go to gigloff.com and get inspired.
Love that.
We also have a Facebook community that's free to people to join. And really what we're trying to do with the Facebook group is just like build conversations and build exposure for like some of the things that we've talked about today. But on the website, you can request a syllabus to see everything that we teach.
Cool.
You can request to be a part of the community. You can join Slack if you're on Slack. Really, we like to just like welcome folks in who are interested, kind of on a non-committal, like, let's get to know each other layer first. And then typically what we find is that people want to kind of take the next step and start to branch into the side hustle and like, okay, yeah, I'm ready to like try a couple clients, you know?
I love that you said just visit our website and get inspired. That's awesome.
It's a pretty cool website, if I may say so.
And I can't believe we didn't know each other before this. I'm like, oh my God, he's totally one of the missing puzzle
pieces.
He's your
people.
Right. And I'm like, this is awesome because knowing that, it really is a missing link that as we're looking at building the ecosystem in Mesa in particular, right?
Yeah.
That it's a critical piece that's going to be helping everybody who's there. So that's just awesome.
Cool.
Now, we're going to find some middle ground. We're going to have to bring you guys out to Levine for like a special one.
Or y'all
time
can start
only.
Your own spot there is what you could do. I mean, really, what we'd love to see, you know, as just a community-led model is that where there are other people that, like me, you know, have a well-paying practice during the day, where you have space in the evenings and the weekends, where you choose to have a space that could have multiple uses.
Yeah.
You know, we're not a co-working space. We're not an incubator. It really is having that space that's fully utilized.
Sure.
That is something I think that's a model we'd love to see, you know, popping up everywhere because I know it's not for everybody. We appreciate folks who drive in, but really like that's, I think what we need to have in many communities is where there's just underutilized space that could be available.
And just a quick note for anybody who's listening out in the West Valley, there's cool stuff happening over there as well. So 1 Million Cups Phoenix now has a West Valley chapter and what used to be called Youth Startup Weekend is now like Youth Changemaker Summit or something like that. That's happening, I think, like next weekend. And people are just like pouring resources into that area as well. It is a completely different part of the valley. Like, I try not to drive clear across town. Even though, to be real, it's only like 30 minutes when there's no traffic.
Yeah.
But there's cool stuff happening over there as well.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention it.
And we want to have field trips and like solidarity because it would be great to have people that go over there for sure, right? I feel it's real. You know,
I will make the hour plus drive and get to Mesa.
Okay. That's great. So what we have coming up, so we have our Facebook page is the best way to see what's happening. We host 1 Million Cups East Valley, which we're super excited about as an ecosystem building model. We do it once a month for us, just in the pace of Mesa and everything else. But we have some ongoing events, Startup Life Support, the YouTube Creators Academy, the Freelancers Union, and we have some cool things. We have Freddie Johnson from Mesa Public Schools is doing winter storytelling as traditional Navajo Diné stories, which he'll be doing on Tuesday night, I think October 29th, which are stories that are only told in the wintertime. It's very significant for Navajo people. And it's also very open to other people, especially with kids that want to have that experience. One of the things we've learned is that culture, connection, family events, business events in many communities is really interrelated. So when people can come into a space for a particular purpose that maybe not initially is totally business related, sure, that and they feel comfortable and respected and welcome, then they're going to be more likely to think about doing business things.
Yes.
I absolutely adore you guys. And the fact that you both seem so community-centered, I think is very special. And you just don't see that every day. And so I know that much like freelancing and gig economy, and that's not for everybody. I also know that not everybody can put their whole selves into community. And so the fact that this was your calling, this was the work that you were called to do, and you answered the call and you showed up and you're bringing that excellence with you, I think a lot of other people are benefiting from you just simply doing what you know that you're good at doing, what you're great at doing.
Thank you.
And so I'm really excited about the things that are going on. I'm excited that people have outlets to reach you, to learn more about Gig Loft. Kef, for the record, it's K. Is it like accent
mark? It's K-E, yeah. So for most people, it's funny. The physical, Ke is a Navajo word that means a system of kinship. So that's really the name of the physical space. I'm very cautious about not using that as a big national brand because it's a very culturally relevant term. So the physical space is that name. But the Main Street Learning Lab is really the programming that we can think of. It's a little easier for non-Navajo speakers to say.
Thank you on behalf of myself and
that's
others.
Right. That's okay. Right.
All right. And so let's round us out with just some quick and dirty lightning round.
Let's do it.
Just a really, really quick one. I'll have you both answer the same question. What is the biggest thing that you want somebody to know as a result of listening to you and following you?
You have options. So listen to the suggestions that were given, jump on it. Be open-minded. And if you can sign up for a new service, you know, with Gig Loft, learn something, reach out to either of us and just know that there are options out there. We're a small part of a much bigger ecosystem of people who want to see you succeed and you're not alone.
And in keeping with that, it's really important to realize that we have a lot more control than we often realize, and that we can truly be the own architects of our career paths and body of work, and that we don't have to settle for where we're at currently. It may be a little risky. It may take time to come fully to fruition. It may take a year, a lifetime's worth of work. Sure. But grabbing life by the horns and engineering our own success is possible. And it really just comes down to your skill, your passion, and your network.
I could not have said that better myself, you guys. We just have so many skills and we do not need to be afraid of them.
Right.
We do not need to be afraid of looking different from the traditions or the norms. We do not simply have to follow the path that somebody else laid out for us. Mm. And so be brave as you go out beyond this show and go back out into the world and reconsider, you know, is the work that you're doing the work that you're supposed to be doing? And if not, put your bigger boots on, your big boy boots on, and go and explore some freelance options and or consider just reconstructing your corporate environment.
Yes.
And making sure that you're finding a right fit for you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you so much to our amazing guests for candid conversation that got steered way off my little script. But to Jeremy Chevalier, I said that right again, I think.
Yes, you did.
And Pam Slim, thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll see you all next time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us at the Day Before Monday. We hope you have a renewed sense of confidence and strategy to create a more enjoyable career. For more from our host, Brenda Cunningham, please visit pushcareermanagement.com and, of course, follow her on Facebook and LinkedIn. We'll see you next month with a new installment of The Day Before Monday every fourth Friday at 1 p.m. right here live on PhoenixBusinessRadioX.com. Until next time, keep pushing.